Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we are recapping today, season 10, episode number 7. Lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7. And lucky us, Nancy, because we have some amazing listeners out there. And we just want to take this moment to say thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for writing in. Thanks for all the love that y'all share on Instagram, compliments_to_the_chef_pod. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please drop us a review. Okay, end sales pitch.
Oh my God, I do love our listeners. And I like when they DM us silly little things. And as a note, if you do DM us silly little things, we will read them as part of a potluck segment. But we do not have a potluck segment tonight. Instead, we have leftovers. I believe we have 2 leftovers from last week's show.
We are already out of the running for the Clean Plate Club counter. So good thing we didn't make that a thing or anything.
Yeah, good thing. Oh my God. We did not clean our plate because we have 2 leftovers. Bits, do you want to start with yours?
Yeah. So we were discussing, Brooke won a car, 2012 Prius. We were discussing whether or not it's possible to take the cash value in lieu of a car. A very cursory Google reveals that no, you typically cannot take the cash value of a car won on a reality show. Most rules will state that you have to accept the prize as presented and can't directly exchange it for cash. So you'd need to sell the car to get a cash equivalent.
Oh, I was going to say, so you can sell it once it's in your possession.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever sold something that you got for free?
Yeah, like I've sold like clothing or stuff that I've gotten for free.
You get clothes for free?
Yeah, like if they're a gift.
Oh.
You know? Like I got a pair of...
Name names.
For instance, my dad got me a pair of boots that were half a size or too big. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll just take these to the railroad. So
you,
I sold
those. You
didn't
return them? You just sold them?
No, because what happens is like we celebrate Christmas like months after Christmas if I don't see him over Christmas.
Ah.
So it was just 1 year in particular that I got these really late.
Wow, thank you.
It's all good because I made $10 or whatever it is, you know.
Dude, we got to talk about the Real. I sold like $300 worth of stuff. And I'm talking like the Real priced things. There was the value of these items was way higher.
Right.
I would say cumulatively, I probably sold $300 worth of items. And then I got a check for like $2.28.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what service are you providing me?
Literally none, because I also brought the items to the Real storefront right. in Manhattan.
I'd rather just donate. Honestly, I threw like a big bag of clothes like just in a barn behind a church last week. That's the way to do it. Yeah, there was just like a huge barn that was like drop off clothes here. And I was on my way to Goodwill. So I was like, perfect. It's even closer. And no human interaction. I could just throw them right in the barn.
I was going to say, I need to know like what scam that person was running in that barn.
Scam to give everybody in America coats.
Well, sometimes there are good scams, the way there are sometimes good judgy tables.
I got a good judgy table on the horizon.
Oh, okay. Well, then let us not complain about the Real much longer. I will do my leftover, which is Stefan mentioned that the only thing he and Anna Faris had in common was that they were both in episodes of Entourage.
Yes.
And I was incredibly curious about when Stefan was in an episode of Entourage. And it turns out that in the year 2010, Stefan had a 2-second cameo on an episode of Entourage where he came out and said, "How is everything?" He played himself. And the article has a screenshot of his cameo. And it's like a really bad photo and he's like sort of blurry. And the funniest thing ever, the author wrote, "Blink and you'll miss it, however. As he never stops walking, it's completely impossible to take a screenshot of him that isn't blurry."
I love that. It's like when like people that wear the scarf that like scrambles like facial recognition.
Photos?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So that's Stefan's cameo in Entourage. I bet he had a good time. Apparently, there's a photo of him with the cast. And when I clicked the link, it took me to a defunct Just Jared article.
Whoa.
Do you remember Just Jared?
Yeah. Is that still run by anybody or was it?
I don't think so because it looked like
is the it link just led Jared? Nowhere.
Yeah, I guess Just Jared's running it.
What happens when Jared leaves? Just.
Okay, we will not keep our listeners from our incredible content any longer. So, Bits, let's begin. Sorry, there is a fly that has been tormenting me. You. Like literally, and I never see it unless I'm podcasting, and then the fly fucking comes out.
Because you're never not like looking at your phone or your TV or doing something. Like it's the only time that your eyes are just wandering to like see the fly.
No, it always hovers around me when I'm podcasting, and it's just like, get out of my shoe, fly, don't bother me.
as they used to say. Yeah, yuck. Sorry, dude. Okay. All right, Nancy. Amuse-bouche reactions to this episode. A very good time.
First, incredible pun. I mean, I love shit like that. but my amuse-bouche is another silly little quickfire, so you know I'm in love. And in general, we had some fun, good cooking and some very playful rivalries, which I appreciated. What about you? Amuse me.
Nanny.
Nanny. You know what's funny? When I was in high school, I wrote an article for the high school newspaper, and for some reason, they always spelled my name Nanny De Silva. They forgot the C.
Wow, I get it now. If I were Stefan, this is the Stefan equivalent of what I'm about to say is like, me and Nancy's high school newspaper have one thing in common, and it's that we both forgot the letter C. Okay. sorry, Nanny. I was going to say this was a banner episode for bacon. Yeah, we got a lot of bacon. I think we got 4 bacon in this episode.
I'll be the judge of that. Episode 7, I believe we got 4 bacons in this episode. Let's do a quick check-in on our counters because bacon is blowing everything out of the water. I've never seen numbers like this in my life. Okay.
So and I've been an analyst for show for 11 months.
I'm literally a quantitative analyst for a hedge fund and I've never seen numbers like this in my life. I am not afraid of math. And as a result, I will tell you that our counters are at the following. I will go in reverse order of instances. Spot prawns, we've seen 3. Food N number of ways, we've seen 4 times. Cauliflower, we've seen 6 times. Mushrooms, we've seen 8 times. And would you like to guess how many times we've seen bacon?
10.
14.
Oh my God. What is
Do
this
these
episode?
People have
7?
Like heart problems in this
oh
episode?
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is episode 7.
I would be annoyed if I was the judges at this point.
It's a lot of fucking bacon. It's a lot of one. The thing is, bacon really overpowers everything. So this
Yeah, it's like, not like bacon tastes different ways. It's just like gonna taste like bacon. And the thing you're making is also gonna taste like bacon. Okay, wow. Well, thanks for checking in from the analyst desk.
I'm going to go back to my hole and look at numbers.
I'm putting it all on bacon. It's a real bull market for bacon. Or is it a bear market? I forget.
Bull. That's where there's the bull outside the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, can you imagine if it was a bear? Be like,
rah!
They're going to facing each other. All right. So, but it was a big episode for bacon. Congrats to bacon, I guess. Let's move into the quickfire, which you said very correctly was a very silly little quickfire. This week, the chefs have to cook a meal with aluminum foil, Reynolds wrap, to be exact.
Not tin foil, not aluminum foil, not aluminium foil if you're in Australia.
Why do they add that I? There isn't an I there.
I think it's just a difference of opinion.
Yeah, that's weird.
As we all know, there are no facts.
No facts. No facts. So on top of the fact that they need to cook in Reynolds wrap, every ingredient in the kitchen is also covered in Reynolds wrap.
I was obsessed with this. This was so really fun.
One of them like didn't notice. They're like, oh, I didn't even notice that. I was like, how do you not notice that? It's so much tinfoil.
It's like so much tinfoil. Okay, there was so much going on in my head during this, but primarily I was just like, who was the PA who had to stay up all night tinfoiling every single thing in the Top Chef kitchen?
He's like texting all of his like intern friends and they're like, sorry, man, I can't meet you tonight. I'm still at work wrapping.
I need to know how many rolls of tin. How many, take a guess, how many rolls of tinfoil do you think they went through for that?
I mean, tinfoil lasts a shockingly long time. Shout out Reynolds Wrap. I bet they went through 10 rolls of, I'm being like kind of conservative.
That's pretty conservative.
I'm being pretty bearish on my Reynolds Wrap. Estimation.
I was gonna say like at least 75.
I don't know, dude. Like you could, if you're judicious with your Reynolds wrap, you can get it pretty far.
Okay, Miss Bits, scrimp and save Nicholas over here.
I think I have the same Reynolds wrap from when I moved into this apartment.
That's insane. I go through literally Reynolds wrap, but tinfoil. Like I wouldn't say quickly, but I use it quite frequently.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, okay. So we had the PA doing it, but there was another thing is that so you literally could not visualize any ingredients. They were all wrapped in tinfoil. And the other thing was it once you opened an ingredient, you had to use it.
That was the best part.
Okay. We gotta talk about John Tizar picking a pineapple. How the fuck do you pick a pineapple and not realize that it's something that's difficult to work
and
with?
And he thought it was like a bushel of herbs?
Of herbs? Like, my guy.
You think that they like packaged up a bundle of herbs just for you to like pick up in the shape of a pineapple?
I was like, you really thought you were doing something there and you got egg on your face.
Sir, this is a Wendy's. Yeah, that was kind of crazy. Let's see what else we had going on. Let's start with like what didn't work here. We had Brooke draw a sweet potato, onion, and bacon, our first bacon.
Okay.
Padma had like a very kind of like over the top Padma reaction, as she is wont to do when she asks, you know, a leading question, like, yeah, is some of this onion raw? And she's like fanning her mouth. I'm like, it's not hot. Like,
it's like we've all eaten a raw onion before. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a strong flavor, but you don't.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, okay. My God. Also, she's missed, like, nothing could be spicy enough for me.
Right.
And, like, a fucking onion took you down, Padma.
This gazpacho is burning my lips. Yeah.
This gazpacho is white hot.
Another person that's kind of just hanging out in the bottom these past few eps, Josh.
Yeah.
Did a roasted chicken with poblanos. It was, like, kind of uninspired was the word. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Izar, by the way, who's our guest judge for this quick fire.
Can we pause on Stephanie Izar for a second? The first woman to ever win Top Chef and kind of the only woman to win Top Chef for a long time.
Until this season.
Yes. Well, I wasn't going to spoil it, but I guess Statute of Limitations is up. Kristen Kish does win this season.
Well, we don't have to say who, but fuck. I guess people know that. I don't know. If you're listening to this and you're surprised, like, let us know who you are because I'd love to know. Nancy and I also often talk about, like, if there's people who, like, go – so, for instance, like, when – oh, God. Do we want to go down this?
Yeah.
I'll just say that, like, we went and saw Wicked recently.
Do it.
Okay. So my friend and I in high school had this, like, phenomena, quick side tangent, or this theory that there had to have been at least one person in the world who went to see the movie Twilight and was actually surprised the moment that it was revealed that they were all vampires. But like, who is that person? And like, where and what were the circumstances that led to them to go see Twilight without that context?
Exactly. It's like, how are you that far out of the zeitgeist and then go see the movie?
And also go to it. Yeah. I just don't think that person exists. So
either has to be one.
All to say, like, I wonder if that person exists that's listening to us and doesn't know how the season ends.
It's listening to our off-season recap of season 10 of Top Chef and is like, I didn't know Kristen won this season.
But anyways, we should add a spoiler alert there.
Oh, huge. Okay, so let's just keep talking about what these kooky chefs made. Speaking of Kristen Kish, Kristen adopts an incredibly clever strategy, which is to bake. And I think what's so clever about it is like the like flour, baking soda, all these things are probably pretty recognizable in their shape. And she also knows where they are in the kitchen. So she was able to collect the ingredients and successfully make a literal cake.
Yeah.
With she also accompanied that cake with – it was an almond and chocolate sponge cake with a sébillon. Like, absolutely delicious.
Yo, do we need a sébillon counter? I've been hearing a lot of sébillon.
I've been hearing a lot of sébillon. It's too late now. Honestly, at this point in the season, it's too late. Yeah. But counters – look, pour one out for counters. We should have done celery and sébillon.
And salmon.
And salmon.
The three. Ugh.
Don't even talk to me about – oh, there's the fly again. It's all over the fucking place. I just am sad that we didn't – the annoying thing is that we had salmon in the counter and then we took it out because we were like, oh, it's a protein. It's like steak. But it just feels particularly poignant this season, yeah. The salmon of it,
yeah,
all.
We played ourselves.
But moving on down the line, okay, we have Danielle, who was the first to be judged, who made a cannellini stew with bacon and tomatillo. That's bacon number two for the episode. This looked delicious. It sort of looked like mm-hmm. a white chili to me.
Yeah, and this was her kind of redemption moment. It was yep. something that got shouted out. She was in the mm-hmm. top for this. And it was nice to see her win one.
Yep.
She didn't win it, but like figuratively.
It was nice to see her, yeah, not feel, you know, like she like was consistently getting beat up by the judges. Yeah. And then we have Micah making a grilled lamb with panzanella. Was there pancetta in that? Or was I hearing panzanella and pancetta?
I didn't catch pancetta.
I don't think there's pancetta. I think I just mistyped. Anyway, I love a panzanella. Oh, my God.
I do, too.
Panzanella with, like, delicious summer tomatoes. Oh,
but not with raw lamb on top, which I know we've been complaining about, like, the – people being a little bit harsh on the undercooked stuff this season, but this one was actually pretty
gnarly. Looked blue. Not liking it. But the panzanella sounded tasty. I liked where his head went. Then we have Stefan, Mr. Entourage himself. Dude, he's doing a lot of German potatoes this season.
Yeah, I kind of clocked the same thing.
I'm over it.
He's throwing what he knows.
Like it's really all variations of the same thing. Like, I'm surprised that the judges have not yet called him out for literally making the same dish every time.
Right.
Smoked salmon and potatoes. Like, this was essentially identical to his dish in the last quickfire, which was salmon with latkes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe those two. I can't remember. I think it was the last one.
Yeah. No, I
anyway,
agree.
I'm just like yawn city with Stefan right now. Sorry. Then we have John, who pulled the pineapple. How he couldn't tell it was a pineapple wrapped, I'll never understand. But he made an egg drop soup with pineapple and beef.
Yeah, and it was fine.
Ew.
Yeah, I don't need that. I don't need that particular dish.
Not one bit. Would you eat that? No.
No. And I think that's all the coverage we got. We had a few folks that we didn't see. Or Sheldon, I guess, was a standout as well.
Sheldon made lemongrass smoked scallops with fresh herbs. That actually sounded delicious.
Yeah, his sounded great.
No, but the person we haven't spoken about yet, whom we must call out, is Bart. Because Bart made a beer poached cod. He was in the top for this challenge. But why we must call out Bart is he took this challenge and the Reynolds wrap so seriously. He made, like, so many cooking utensils out
with
of Reynolds wrap. he was so cute.
Proud
he's like,
of it.
I even made a strainer.
Yeah, they're like, wow.
Yeah. Okay, I was kind of annoyed at Padma and Stephanie in that moment for, like, it being a challenge about Reynolds wrap. They did not, like, reward his creativity with the Reynolds wrap enough, if you ask me.
If I was the, like, marketing, like, account manager on this, like, Top Chef partnership, I'd be like, they needed to show a little bit more.
Yeah, I completely agree. Anyway, so fabulous quickfire. So in the top, we had five people in the top. We had Danielle, we had Stefan, we had Kristen, Bart, and Sheldon. In the bottom, we had Micah, Brooke, and Josh. And then with absolutely no praise or critique is John and his weird egg drop soup with pineapple. It was kind of funny that everyone but one person got called out.
Yeah. And that's kind of a thing for a couple of these next challenges. Yeah. I guess we're just in that weird spot.
Yeah, where there are kind of no rules around top and bottom. Now, I will say that nowadays on Top Chef, they're pretty strict about top three, bottom three.
Yeah.
For every single challenge at like quickfire and elimination.
Yeah.
They've definitely gotten the judges table formula.
But even in the recent season, I actually think that they like kind of push even further beyond that, and they don't even have like a defined top three.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you know, right. they've almost like dropped that even.
Yeah. I don't know. You make a good point. Anyway, that's our quickfire. It was so much fun. But we are now moving into our elimination challenge. And as Bits said, it was a very good time. You want to tell us about it?
Yes. It was a head-to-head battle. I love when they do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's always really fun because then it's also probably fun for them because they're like, okay, cool. I just have to beat one person.
Yes.
The odds are a bit more in your favor.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, they had a head-to-head battle. They have to cook a dish celebrating a berry at a local berry festival for 150 people. So the chefs all paired off in a very interesting way. Thanks for asking. So the top, and this is, I think, to your point, Nancy, why they kind of like called out the top five and the bottom five, because those top five get to pick the person that they're going to compete against from the bottom set. So we had Danielle picked Josh to have a little Oklahoma-Texas rivalry. Stefan picked John. Because he's old. That was basically the logic there. Josie picked Lizzie.
By the way, imagine if he said, like, I pick Tom Colicchio because he's old. Tom would have been like, fuck off.
Yeah. I guess that's why he didn't say it to his face, maybe.
No, he did say it to Tom's face. And Tom was like, that feels like a losing strategy.
and then, let's see. Sheldon picked Micah. This was the first person that got picked.
Can we talk about how Sheldon picked Micah? Can we please talk about this?
He was a gentleman.
Not only was he a gentleman, like, Sheldon is there to be himself, but also, like, to win. He's not taking any – he's not cutting any corners, no shortcuts. He's like, I think Micah is a really good competitor, and I want to compete against him.
Yeah.
He easily could have been, like, Danielle, you know? Yeah. She's been in the bottom a lot.
Yeah. Or Josh,
and
even.
Just –
Danielle
integrity.
Was in the top, so he couldn't pick her, but yeah.
Fair,
the
yes.
Point still stands.
Yes. Sheldon's integrity throughout this entire show and competition is something that should be studied.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Good guy.
Good guy. Ay, va-voy. I hope that in his Where Are They Now, we don't find out that he like got canceled for something, because I'm going to be really upset.
No, I think he's just chilling hard.
He is chilling. No, he's quite successful.
I make an amazing Portuguese bean soup out of his cookbook. It's really good. I made it a few times now.
How many bean recipes do you have in the old noggin over there?
I probably have like five on rotation.
That's five more than I have. If I'm being honest.
This one isn't super bean heavy, to be honest. It's like, it's called like everything with the kitchen sink, so it's sort of, you are meant to throw in all of your like old groceries and stuff that's in the fridge. But it's very good. I'll make it for you.
Noted.
Okay.
You've,
and then lastly,
beans before and not delivered, so I'll believe you when I see it.
Lastly, we had Kristen, who didn't have to compete against anybody.
No, we have to talk about Bart and Brooke. So Brooke was the last one picked to compete against.
Correct. And then Bart picked Brooke. And Brooke kind of made a whole, like, Brooke was very excited about that.
Yeah, she was like, no one wants to compete against me because they know I'll beat them. Which, by the way, like, she's right.
Yeah, she's definitely right.
Brooke is the silent killer of this season.
And it's finally, like, starting to become apparent. Mm-hmm. So each of those pairings also had a particular berry. So Bart and Brooke had the blackberry. Danielle and Josh had the blueberry. John and Stefan, the gooseberry. Josie and Lizzie had raspberry, Micah and Sheldon had strawberry, and then Kristen had the tayberry, which I've actually never had.
I was going to say, I've heard of all of these berries except for tayberries.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
I wonder what the deal with tayberries is. It kind of looked like a raspberry.
If you had the option, which Barry would you pick?
I have the exact same question in my notes for you. And because it is 2025 and I'm following my resolutions, I'd like you to answer first, please.
To be honest, I might go Gooseberry just because it's like, it's less, I think there would be less pressure for Gooseberry than all the other berries. Even though the other berries might be easier to work with, I feel like there's so many like preconceived ways of dealing with those berries that it would freak me out. Like I'd get in my head about blueberry. I'd get in my head about strawberry. Like those would freak me out with just the sort of like openness of the possibility. Mm-hmm. Gooseberry, mm-hmm. At least I would focus in on, okay, it's tart. It's maybe most people at this party have not had gooseberry. I mean, I guess they have because they're all there like excited about berries. So presumably they know a lot about berries.
This crowd seems like a gooseberry happy crowd.
Yeah. But admittedly, like I've had gooseberries like twice in my life. So I don't know. That might be a flawed strategy. Backup, I would say blackberry.
Okay. Like, you know what? I've talked myself out of my answer.
Yeah.
Okay, before I answer, I quickly looked up the tayberry. The tayberry is a cultivated shrub in the genus of Rubus of the family of Rosacea, patented in 1979. The tayberry did not exist until 1979, which is incredible. It is a cross between a blackberry and a red raspberry. Sounds like an A-plus berry to me.
Yeah, that does sound good. Maybe I changed my answer to
No. I changed my answer to tayberry. You already changed your answer once. I get the tayberry.
Okay, fair.
Thank you.
But who are you going to compete against if you got to pick?
That's a great question. Who would I compete against? Josie. I think Josie is a bit of a presence in the kitchen that might throw me off my game.
Yeah.
I take it back. As you got to take back one of your answers,
sure.
I get to take back one of mine. I think that I – here, hold up. Are we assuming that I am a talented enough chef to compete on
yeah,
Top Chef?
To compete against any of them.
Do I have to compete as myself?
No. Let's assume that it's just you are a chef in this kitchen and who would you want to pick?
Yeah. Okay, so I am talented enough to compete.
Yes.
In that scenario, I think I would want to go against Sheldon.
Wow.
Because I just love him.
Yeah, that would be
a fair fight.
That would be fun. It would be a fair fight in this
made-up
reality.
If I'm talented enough to be in the Top Chef kitchen and I've passed all 7 eliminations, then yeah, I think it's a fair fight.
This extended, like, suspended
you
reality.
You posed the hypothetical.
I know.
And I asked you follow-up questions. And I
and
am
we'd
just
both
existing
be
in the
great,
world.
And
you
I'd
have
be amazing.
Created. And it would be great. And we'd be friends.
Okay.
It's like the girl in Mean Girls. I just want to go back to middle school. We were all friends.
I would pick Josh and encourage him to make pork.
You bitch.
I know. Okay, so let's talk a bit about let's get into the day because I think this is one of those challenges where, you know, they're serving all these guests. A lot of their sort of like table side plating comes into play as far as like why they're let's start with Josie. That was a bit of the like drama lightning rod this episode. So Josie had the raspberry as a reminder, as well as Lizzie. She did a rockin' raspberry roll, sockeye salmon, Dungeness crab, and a raspberry aioli. on the other side of the fence, Lizzie did a steamed cabbage roll stuffed with pork and raspberries and bacon, our third bacon of the day. What are you thinking about these dishes?
I will be honest, none of them really appeals to me. Josie's particularly does not appeal to me.
Yeah.
Because the shellfish.
Yeah.
Lizzie's, it would be the type of thing where I'm like, yeah, I'll try this.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be the thing I would order on the menu, but all of the ingredients in there I'm okay with. I think Josie's just seemed like so complicated and unedited almost.
Yeah.
It was like, put that in there and that in there and that in there and that in there. which I think was evident by the fact that she ran out of time in the prep time and was doing a lot of assembly a la minute, as they say.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, Lizzie sounded interesting, actually. I think of any of the berries, bacon and raspberry make the most sense.
By the way, she did bacon and raspberry in the Pike Place Market Breakfast Challenge.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going back to the well a bit this season. I would give it to Lizzie in this one. Agree with Tom that it's kind of crazy that you make it so heavy with like mayonnaise and a spring roll. Like, you know, it's not to say that like there isn't like you can get a sushi roll with like hot mayonnaise in it. But I don't know. There was a bit of a like vibe disconnect with the raspberry element. Then we had Micah and Sheldon. So the good vibes crew.
Oh, loved it.
Great vibes. Yeah. Sheldon also did a roll. So he did an ahi summer roll paired with fresh strawberries and strawberry puree.
I'll be honest. Sheldon's was the one where I was like, I want to eat that all day.
Yeah.
All of these dishes, I'm lining up first for Sheldon's dish.
Yeah. I just trust that he can like do stuff with fresh. Like, I just think he can handle those.
But like, also like that raw fish with berries is a beautiful combination. Yeah. Like, I'm surprised we didn't get more any crudos out of today.
And especially like the strawberry. Like I of any of the berries, not to say it doesn't work, but that's the furthest from what I would say is safely an amazing pairing.
Yeah. So that sounded delicious. And then Micah made essentially fried chicken and waffles. Mm-hmm. So the fried chicken, they had great things to say about. They said it was delectable and good and well-cooked and seasoned and all these things. But the biscuit he served it with, unfortunately, was dense and didn't really – it was not a nice compliment to the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
During the judging of the day, it didn't seem like that biscuit was like the judges were too hung up on it. But then we see as we get to judges' table – I keep saying judging because I'm about to say judgy. I'm so used to us saying – anyway, as we get to judges' table, we see that biscuit, like, come to play. I wonder if they sort of hammed that up for judges' table because, like, his dish was fine.
Yeah.
And it was certainly not one of the worst ones there. But anyway, let's keep moving on. We've got Danielle and Josh, who are actually the first to serve. Danielle makes a chicken terrine with a blueberry mostarda. Josh makes a savory goat cheese mousse with blueberry compote. Feedback for Danielle is that the terrine is rubbery, a bit like lunch meat they compared it to.
Yeah, that's tough.
Which is not nice and not very flavorful. And her crostata is too crunchy. You heard that crunch. It was insane.
Yeah, it was the crunch heard around the world.
The mics were picking up that crunch hardcore.
Yeah. Tough. And
tough.
On the flip side, Josh didn't have enough crunch. So mm-hmm.
I think it's not necessarily that like his dish lacked texture. I think it was more just like, oh, that little like crunchy put on top was so yummy. I'd love more of it.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I mean, I'm sure that it would make the texture of the dish better if he put more, but I don't think they were saying that it was a structural error with his dish.
I liked the sound of his dish a lot.
Were it not goat cheese, I would too.
Right. Like a mousse, a compote, they had Serrano ham on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Very delicious.
Yep. Now, I must correct myself because I said that we did not get a crudo. That was a lie. Stefan made us a crudo.
Of course.
With his frozen – what was the salmon that he kept popping off about?
The
– Saku salmon? Or Saku tuna? Salmon.
It was tuna. Saku tuna.
And we're like, we get it. He said it so many times.
It's a bit of a thing. I did a quick Google on it and it's one of those things that people are – like both snobbish about I this is my very brief understanding of it. You seem to move through different phases of what you think about it depending on how deeply you're aware of it and your skill as a home cook or otherwise like professional cook. But there I stumbled upon of course like a Reddit post about it, and it was you know, the top comment or the post was like kind of facetious, like, oh, like all of you people in your Saku tuna. And then the comment section was just like, actually no, it's fine, like Saku's like totally a fine tuna. And people like, yeah, you would say that. Like, it's a weird battle line. I don't know, I don't fully understand the culture around it, but like what we kind of saw on TV seems to be representative of some
interesting
drama that exists in the real world. Let's dive into that maybe a little bit more deeply.
Also, can I just take a moment to say thank you for really living in the comments section on that one, because I would have never found it.
Yeah, no, it was wild. I mean, I feel like I watched like some chef's table where the sushi master exclusively uses frozen fish. Like it's not that.
I don't know, dude. I think that John was just being an asshole.
Well, and then we talked about this last episode, but then he quickly, so let's talk about what they made. So yeah. Stefan does the crudo. He does a tuna with radishes and gooseberries, mm-hmm. with two different vinaigrettes of gooseberry. John does a white gazpacho with Spanish chorizo and gooseberries. And early on in the episode, we see a scene where Stefan is trying to buy fresh tuna, but Sheldon gets there first, buys it all up. So he's like, okay, fine. I'll pivot and I'll buy the saku tuna right behind. So he picks that up. And then John just cannot let it go. He's talking about it all episode and the talking head. And then Tom comes over as the chefs are cooking, and they check in with Stefan first, and Tom comes over and checks in with Stefan, and Stefan is like not giving any specific shit to John. He's just sort of saying like, I'm gonna whoop his ass, kind of general.
Yes,
you know, it's like, yeah, we're doing it. And then like Tom goes over there, and I'm just waiting. I'm like, this guy's like practically exploding by how much he just wants to say that this fish is frozen. And finally, he, like, gets it out in a really just, like, cringe way. He's like, well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to be pretty good because, like, it's my fish isn't frozen or whatever he says it. And then that kind of erupts. But the thing that annoys me the most about this whole thing is that then later he's like, it's actually not about the fact that it's frozen. It's that it's not sustainable.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm like, you can't edit that. You went in too hard, dude. So like, hard. We all know what your deal is.
Also, like, I think it was when Tom didn't give John the reaction he was hoping for of like, oh, Stefan, cardinal rule, how could you get frozen fish? Tom was like, okay, it looks like you guys are both cooking. Like,
yeah, he's like, all right.
I'm gonna head out. I have so many thoughts about him, and in the next episode, I have thoughts about him as well.
It's real pick me. It's weird. It's like, God,
it's not
man.
Even pick me to me. It's just like he wants to be with the cool kids so badly that he overdoes it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The thing though, okay, so let's talk like they're at the Berry Fest. John, so the criticism that the judges lob at him is that it seems like he's made two different dishes in the same cup between the chorizo and the gooseberries. And then it cuts to a take of one of the guests at this berry festival. And he's like, it's like cheeseburger soup. And I'm like, that is the meanest thing anybody has said on the show yet of
that
anybody, including
cutting.
Hugh Atchison,
including that really asshole-ish bald guy from season six who turns out like,
to be like a
evil,
right-wing
like political commentator in the UK.
What the hell was his name? How can we forget this? Terry or Barry?
Leftover.
Shirley?
Leftover.
It was like some... like,
no, it wasn't. Okay. We're going to leftover what that dude's name was. But we're not going to delve into his history because it was gross.
It was
and
gross.
I don't want to repeat that one.
It was gross.
Yeah. John's dish just didn't look good. Like, it had this grease slick on this white soup. And I understand that the gazpacho, like, had, like, berries in it and all this stuff. So I'm sure it was flavorful. But just the coloring alone, the visual of it, like, throw some fresh herbs on there, my guy. Like, it did not look appealing at all.
I completely agree.
Okay. And then
Quick interjection. It's Toby Young.
Toby Young. Robbing me of a good leftover. But, yes, it was Toby Young. That dude blows. So then we have we've done Sheldon, we've done Danielle,
we've got Bart and Brooke.
We've done Stefan, Bart and Brooke. Dude, Brooke's dessert to me is like such an A+.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It sounded pretty solid. I saw it that time.
You saw the fly? Yeah. I think we have to keep the fly in. Please don't make me edit out the fly.
The fly has
It's been terrorizing me.
Yeah, at least I spoke.
Okay, fly, you're going to prime time. You're in the pod now.
Yeah, this one was a bummer because I think they would have really both done an incredible job had he not put salmon in it. That also just sounds gnarly. Like, Bart made a blackberry soup and then he like put salmon in it. And then he was like, I make this soup all the time. I know it back and forth. I'm like, you make blackberry salmon soup all the time?
Well, he said that he doesn't usually put a protein in it. But then he was like, maybe I should have used crab. But either way, I think it was weird, dude.
Yeah, I don't think
he needed to. Because the soup sounded like it was so good. So just serve the soup.
Well, and also, like, if the challenge is exactly the recipe that you usually make, why would you, like, want to add anything? Okay, yes. That's weird.
But even as Brooke said, I'm making a spicy, smoky chocolate pudding with blackberry tapioca. Oh, yes, yes, yes. All of it. I love it. Delicious. Give me a s'more. My favorite treat. But you can't have more than two. Otherwise, your tummy hurts. Don't fight me. Yum. And so then last but not least, we have Kristen, who doesn't need to compete against anyone, which was kind of cool. And she made a matcha and goat milk custard with her tay berries.
Mm.
Again, not a goat cheese gal, but sounded good.
Sounded great. All right. Yeah. I love these challenges where they have to like cook for massive groups and you see sort of the regular humans take on the different food. We get that like fun moment where the woman is like dragging Josie for taking forever. She's like back there killing all the crabs, and like all of her friends are like, yeah girl.
Like, it looked pretty egregious, like when they did the zoom out and you saw everyone's tents and Josie's has this huge one. And I guess I wonder if you're a guest at one of these, if you are required to try every single dish because they're voting.
Yeah,
so
for
I think
sure.
They have to, so those poor people had to wait on the line for a dish that wasn't even very good.
Yeah, that's kind of brutal.
Let's talk about top and bottom, baby.
Let's start top. So today we honestly didn't really hear any much commentary beyond Kristen's win.
Yeah.
They brought him out there and they were like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And that was that. Mm-hmm. Kristen took win this ep.
Yeah, Kristen has done what Brooke did last episode, which is sweep the ep. She won Quickfire and Elimination. These two women are powerhouses in the top
chef
kitchen.
CEOs.
Yes, they are. Yeah, we didn't really get anything on the top, but we did get a lot on the bottom.
Sure.
So
did.
On the bottom, we have Micah, Bart, John, Danielle, and Josie.
This was a nice bottom because there was a lot of like mea culpa. And in previous episodes, people have really been fighting to be like, no, this and that. And one of the one of the funniest ones was to me like Josie's, when I actually really respect the way that Josie handled it in this. Like, I thought she was like really even tempered when they were like, it wasn't about like showmanship or, you know, you weren't meant to like entertain the crowd. It was about making food. And she was very clearly, she just very clearly like said the point of, I had to do that because it was taking me so long to plate, so I was improvising. I don't know, it's an obvious point, but I just thought it was pretty obvious that's why she was doing that. So I kind of thought it was weird that they kept dinging her for it, where it's like, yeah, she's trying to fill, she's like filling the hot, she's filling the downtime while she's like scrambling to make the thing. Just I don't know. I'm just rambling.
Yeah,
I think
we don't see we don't see the whole thing. It may have been like gratuitous to the point where her hamming it up was actually getting in the way of her making the food.
Yeah, that's very true.
Which I think was the implication there. Like, everyone had the same prep time and managed to have things done.
Yeah.
And you didn't. And so as a result of like your lack of prep, you had to behave in this way, and then as a result, it's caused a line and yada, yada, yada. So I think it's sort of just commenting on her performance in its entirety.
True.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there was anything else. Okay, so let's talk about John at this judge's table.
Yeah.
Because he was the only one who, like, a lot of people were like, you're right, I probably could have conceptualized that better. With Tom, he said to Micah, like, I bet with a few extra minutes that could have been a great dish. Or, like, if you were to remake this, it would be good. So I think it was obvious that there were some people who were on the bottom, but it was relative. Like, had it been a just stacked ranking, they would not have been in front of judges' table. But John Tesar, like, will not let it go. He's like, I'm not making excuses, but the kitchen was crazy. And they're like, everyone had the same kitchen set up.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not making excuses. I'm not making excuses.
But I'm not making excuses.
But, and then he continued to make a lot of excuses. And it was
It was pretty uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable. It was awkward. And it was like, dude, you're the oldest person in this competition. Like, you should not be acting like a child.
And then, so, well, I know I'm jumping ahead, but when they go back into the stew room, he just, like, makes it so much about himself. He's like, they're really tough on me. Man, that was brutal. They really went in on me. I'm like, I don't know. I'm sure they said more than what we saw, but I was like, they kind of ribbed everybody. That's the whole point of being on the bottom.
He lives in an incredibly, like, self-centered world.
Yeah. Let's see.
But anyway, unfortunately.
Well, one other thing I'll say is that, like, even – so Bart, Micah, Danielle all kind of were, like, in the – I wouldn't say, like, in the middle of the pack, but, like, Danielle obviously wasn't because she went home. But Micah and Bart, I think, are – Bart in particular is, like, starting to get, like, similar feedback over and over about, like, seasoning or just, like – I don't know. So, but, yeah, sorry. We say goodbye to Danielle is the long and short of it.
And so her flavorless tureen is the end of her time on Top Chef. But do you want to tell us where she is now?
Sure do. So I didn't find a ton on her. She, according to her Instagram, is a chef at a restaurant called Goodwin in Dallas, Texas. So check it out if you're a local. And then she's also a chef consultant for something called Purple Collar Kitchen. Okay, cool. So yeah, so she's still in the food scene, still cooking food, doing all that stuff.
Love that. And then this episode concludes with yet another fight in the stew room. What is in the water in the stew room?
I don't know.
Is it just producers stirring up shit? Like, I gotta know. This is one of the most contentious Top Chef casts I've ever seen.
Yep.
They really, like, dog on each other a lot.
They're tough. I don't know. I don't know what it is about this, like, era of TV that it's still very, I don't know, dude. I had that thought today that, you know, the video killed the radio star. Social media killed the TV star because.
Oh, I just could wax poetic about this.
You just don't see this anymore. Everybody's sort of just flatline on having any sort of personality if their job isn't being a professional reality star person.
Yes.
Everyone I just think that this was sort of like the last, you know, hurrah in some ways. So
no,
I'm glad we got it out of our systems.
Everyone is so aware of their image and what, like, because social media is a legitimate career path, people are very cognizant of the fact that there are exit opportunities. Like, a lot of people in early Top Chef seasons just, like, went back to their jobs and no one really heard from them again. And in these later seasons, like, now you get a huge social media bump and then you start doing like, it's a whole business. And so people are incredibly aware of their persona and perception on the show. Anyway, yeah, it's just like another explosive fight in the stew room. But nevertheless, we move on. And 100%. In this case, Bits, would you eat it, Danielle's chicken tureen?
No, pastrata? I actually wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
I don't like tureen. I don't know.
I don't like tureen either. Not for
me. Bye, tureen.
But we are brought now to our final segment of the app, judgy table.
I'm going to let you go first this time.
Okay. If you insist.
I insist.
Okay, Nancy, your judgy table starts now. This is a positive judgy table. This is how a sponsored challenge should be done on Top Chef.
Nice.
We have seen the demise of the product placement on Top Chef, and this is such a good example of how to make it good. I am comparing this to season 21 where they did, like, the flambé challenge, and it was the Finnish dishwasher detergent challenge. And they totally, like, dropped the ball on what could have been cool about that. Like, they should have made them clean, dirty dishes and then use whatever they cook. I will die on this hill about that challenge. I know,
that was a great idea.
I will die on this hill about that challenge. And, like, the Reynolds Wrap one, incredible. Everything is wrapped in Reynolds Wrap. Everything. Like, the Reynolds Wrap Corporation could not have asked for better product placement on this challenge. And then you have Bart proudly making a strainer and wrapping his plates in Reynolds Wrap. Like, I love it. They all the producers of Top Chef should go back and watch this challenge for future episodes.
This will be studied for generations. Yes. That was a great one, actually. 1000% agree. That Reynolds Wrap was so strong, he didn't even know it was a pineapple. Like, that's great product.
Incredible. Okay. Oh, thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
You're welcome.
Your judgy table starts now.
I actually also have a positive judgy table, which is the unsung heroes of the Top Chef episode, such as the berry man that drove in the berries this episode. They're basically like NPCs in a video game where, you know, they don't really have anything to say. You know, they're just sort of there. It's basically Torch from this past season.
Torch. Oh, we loved Torch.
When you have this person come in and they're just sort of like a character for like 30 seconds and then they leave and that's like kind of all you get. I actually think they could have given this berry guy more, but the way that he came in and just was like, I got some fresh berries for you. Blueberries.
Berry delivery.
Yeah, it was like, it actually seemed like an NPC. Like, I'm not sure if he was a human, but anyway, so I just love that. I love that they like just plug in normal people to do normal tasks. And
sister. Those were two great judgy tables today. Sometimes we got to inject some positivity. We're not just here to critique. We're here to build up.
Yes. We're not here to break you down. We're here to build you up.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. That brings us to the end of episode 7.
Delicious.
Of Top Chef season 10. And we'll see you next time for episode 8.
Bye.
Bye.